Yud Zayin. By me, it's 17.8.2, correct. Okay, the Mishnah is continuing in the cases that we learned before, that if you do a sin, you get whipped. You get Malkus. So he says, he mentions more cases. Ha'echel bikurim, if somebody eats bikurim, even a kohen, actually kar alehem before he reads the sentences of the Chumash. There's a din in bikurim as follows. You bring the first fruits of the seven fruits that Eretz Yisrael was praised with. You bring them to the Beis HaMikdash. As the Torah says, you put them down, and then you start making a whole speech. The whole beginning of Parshas Kisavi. So until that is done, you're not allowed to eat the Bikurim. Even a Kohen, who normally gets the Bikurim, cannot eat the Bikurim until the process is done. Now we're going to learn later in the Gemara, there's one opinion that says, until you put it down, as soon as you put it down, they become edible. The next opinion says, no, it's not enough to put them down. You also have to read the Psukim and Chumash for you to permit them to be eaten. So if somebody eats Bikurim, actually caught our lamb before they recited the Psukim, he's going to get whipped. Kachi kachim, if you eat the Holy of Holies Karbonis, Chutz L'Kloyim, outside the curtains of the Mishkan's courtyard. Meaning as follows. There are certain karbonis nobody eats. Certain sacrifices nobody eats. Certain sacrifices, as we say in davening, every morning before davening, in Ezel Mekayman, some things are eaten outside the inside the courtyard of the Mishkan. Certain karbonis you're allowed to eat throughout the entire Yerushalayim, depending on the holiness of the carbon. If a carbon was holy, it had to be eaten inside the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. If it was not as holy, lesser level of holiness, carbonis, they could be eaten in Yerushalayim. Now what happens if somebody eats meat of a Kodesh HaKadoshim, the holiest type of sacrifice that must be eaten inside the Mishkan, inside the Beis HaMikdash, and they ate it outside of it? Or Kachim Kalim, the lesser level of Kachim, meaning the lesser holiness, like shlamim, the peace offerings and things like that you're allowed to eat it only in Yerushalayim, and this guy ate it outside of Yerushalayim, or Maisa Sheni, remember we learned already last week, you have to take the 10%, bring it to Yerushalayim, eat it in Yerushalayim, or exchange it for money. Bottom line is, Maisa Sheni has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. So what happens if you eat it outside of Yerushalayim? That's it, whip him. Or we're not done. There's one more case, you whip him. Hasheves ha'etzem b'pesach ha'tod. If a person breaks a bone of the Paschal Lamb. Now the Torah says, etzem le'sish b'rubei. For whatever reason, the Torah says you're not allowed to break a bone of the Paschal Lamb.
While you're eating it or before it dies?
But anytime. Oh. Now, if it's the guy did it, meaning it was a valid Korban Pesach, and the guy broke a bone of the animal, so he transgressed an active negative commandment, which you're going to get whipped for. Like it says, he gets 40 lashes. All these cases, you eat bikurim before the time, you eat kachi kachim in the wrong places, you eat kachi kalim in the wrong places, you eat, you break the bone of a carbon pesach, you get malchus, you get 40 lashes. Really 39, but the Torah uses the word 40. But,
you have to have a witness to get the lashes?
Yeah. Not only witnesses, you need to be warned.
Oh, so second time you get lashes?
No, you need to be warned right before you're doing it that you're not allowed to do it, and if you do it, you're going to get whipped. And the guy went ahead and did it anyway. You never get punished, whipped, or death by court unless if you're warned.
Those whipped, they were injured, the people, when they were whipped, or just hurt them?
They zet them up. They used a thing of a calf 3 inches wide, and the guy hit. It hurt. Before, like we learned in the past, before a guy had Malchus, the doctors evaluated him how many he could handle and not die.
Was all this food treifa?
No. He just ate things in the wrong place.
My day.
But I will want to see your version of the book. But if somebody just leaves over the Paschal Lamb until the morning, the Torah also says by the Paschal Lamb, by the Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to leave over any of the meat of the Paschal Lamb until the morning. But if you do, you transgress the negative commandment. But the Mishnah is going to say you don't get whipped. Why don't you get whipped? Because you only did it passively, not active. Like we learned before in the Gemara, we're going to learn more in the Gemara. The only time you get whipped is you actively transgress a negative commandment. Number one. And over here is a second issue, because the Torah says don't leave it over until the morning. And if you do, burn it. So there's two issues over here. Number one, it's not an active mitzvah. You didn't do anything. You just left it over. You didn't eat it. You didn't do anything. And secondly, it's rectified by a positive mitzvah. And anything which is rectified by a positive mitzvah, you don't get whipped. Or, hashev v'tameh, if somebody breaks a bone of a korban pesach, which is impure. Now, it's not a valid korban if it's impure. In other words, when the Torah says, don't break a bone of a korban pesach, it means, if it's a kosher korban pesach, if it's a kosher paschal lamb, it's a kosher sacrifice, the Torah says, don't break a bone. But if you're impure, or it's impure, and a korban is not kosher, so if you break a bone, you didn't break a bone of a paschal lamb. Because it's not a paschal lamb. Ain't like our bum, you don't get whipped. Then the Mishnah continues. If somebody takes the mother bird while she's still on the young, remember we learned this in before also. The Torah says, if there's a mother bird on the eggs, and the baby birds, and you want to take the kids, you have to send away the mother bird. So he says, what happens? If somebody takes the mother bird while she's still on her young, meaning that she didn't send away the mother bird, Rabbi Yudah says, what did you do? You get Malkus, because you did an Aveda, but you don't have to send her away anymore. Because you sinned, that's it. You sinned, you did Aveda. The Chachamim say no, the opposite. Mishaleach, you have to send her away, but you don't get Malkus. Why? Like we learned before in the Gemara, and the Gemara is going to explain this again, because it's a positive mitzvah which rectifies the negative mitzvah. The Torah says, don't take her, send her away. So by sending her away, you rectify the negative mitzvah that you transgressed. So therefore, you're not going to get Malkus. And the Gemara says, Zahaklau, this is the rule. This is the rule of the game. Kol mitzvah leisase, any mitzvah leisase. Sheyash b'kuma say that has a positive commandment, meaning that remedies and fixes the negative commandment. Ein chayavim aleh, you don't get malchus. This is what the Gemara says. There's one Gemara here. There's one Gemara there. So basically, the Mishnah is saying a very simple dinim. Certain avedis you did, you get malchus. You get lashes. Certain avedis you do, you don't get malchus. Why? Either because you didn't do an action, or because it's connected to a positive mitzvah, and any time a positive mitzvah rectifies a negative mitzvah, you don't get punished for the negative mitzvah. That's where we're up to now. So the Gemara says, Daf Yud Zayin, right after the Mishnah, midway through the page, where it says Gemara. Amar Abba Bar Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, said Abba Bar Bachana, said the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Zu Divrei Rabbi Kiva Stimot. Our Mishnah is nameless. It's called in Gemara Stam Mishnah. Now, many Mishnahs, you have names of people in the Mishnah. You know, Rabbi said this, this Rabbi said this. Sometimes Mishnahs are nameless. Why are Mishnahs nameless? So, there's many reasons. The real reason Rabbi Yudan Nasi, when he organized the Mishnah, made a Stam Mishnah, is because he wanted that everybody should agree. That means he wanted to make it in a way that, like, everybody's agreeing to this. You know what? There might be Gemara Makis more on the bottom, in the back bookcase. There might be more.
The red one.
No. Oh, yeah, the red one also, but there might be some more in the back bookcase, too. When he made a Stam Mishnah, okay, why? Because he wanted to show that everybody agrees with it. So he says, which opinion is the nameless opinion of our Mishnah? Says Rabbi Akiva. But Aval Chachamim Eimrim, the Chachamim say, Bikurim Hanocha Me'akeviz Bohem, well, the only thing that stops you from eating Bikurim is putting it down. Kriya Ein Me'akeviz Bohem. But the resuscitation and reciting of the verses, that doesn't matter. And like we explained before, when you bring Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah says, V'samta Batena, you put him in a basket and you put him down. Then you have part two. You have to thank Hashem and show Hashem gratitude for all the kindness that he did to us, that he gave us land and he produced fruit and so on and so forth. Which Rashi explains from the Medrash and from the Gemara, that the mitzvah of Bikurim is to teach us not to be unthankful. It's called a kfui teiva. Somebody does a favor for you, not thankful. The whole concept of the first fruits that you bring to the Beis HaMikdash is to thank Hashem for what he did. Now, when is the final... Bikurim you don't bring on the Mizbeach. It's not like a korban that you bring it, shecht it, and sacrifice it on the Mizbeach. Bikurim, you bring to the Beis HaMikdash, you do the process. When the process is over, the koyan needs to be Bikurim. Now the question is, when is the process really over? The Chachamim say, the process is over as soon as you put it down. The Torah says, you also have to read Psukim. You also have to say part of the Chumash. But the mitzvah Bikurim, you get as soon as you put it down. Which means, as soon as you put it down, it's edible. And if you eat it, you're not punishable. That's what the Chachamim hold. Rabbi Kiva holds, no. It's not enough to put down the Bikurim, you must also say the verses in the Chumash. When you finish saying the verses in the Chumash, that's when the Bikurim becomes edible. So according to Rabbi Kiva, if you eat the Bikurim before you read the Psukim, you're going to get whipped because the Kohen wasn't allowed to eat it. Now our Mishnah said clearly, if you eat Bikurim before you read the Psukim, you get whipped. So Rabbi Baba Chana, in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, said, which opinion holds that? That's Rabbi Kiva. Because according to the Chachamim, as soon as you put it down, you don't get Malkus anymore.
What is the word Bikurim mean?
Bikurim, you know what Bukhar is?
No.
Bukhar, firstborn.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Bukhar, you have a Bukhar of a behema, of an animal.
Yeah.
You have firstborn people.
Right.
And you have firstborn fruits. Firstborn fruits are called Bikurim. Firstborn animals are called Bukhar behema. And firstborn kids are called Bukhar. Right? Now, all the Bukhars, God said, belong to God. That's why you have a firstborn son, you have to do what's called Pinyan Aben, you got to redeem him. You have to buy him back from the Kohen. You have first fruits, you have to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. You have firstborn animals, they were brought as sacrifices to the Beis HaMikdash.
I don't think anybody today knows when they buy fruit that it's first.
Well, it only applies in Israel.
How do they know?
People know.
What's the
no, time? Speaking, Bikurim doesn't apply today. Bikurim applies in the olden times. At the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Rashi explains in Chumash from the Mishnah that when a farmer went down to his field and he saw the first fruits blossoming, he tied a thread around them that they were the first ripened fruits. And then when they become fully ripened, they have the threads around them. So he knew those were the first fruits that he brought to the Beis HaMikdash.
He said the whole concept is to thank Hashem, appreciation. Does it apply to this or to anything? Is it asur to not to appreciate?
Right? You always have to appreciate what Hashem does. That's why we say every morning we wake up, we say Meidani, and we say Baruch Atah Hashem Anesim Nasech Vina, Baruch Atah Hashem, Baruch Atah Hashem. We thank Hashem for everything.
I'm talking about Hashem, I'm talking about man to man.
So also you have to say thank you. So
if you don't appreciate somebody that does good to you,
you're not a mensch.
But you
do Avera. You're not a mensch. If you're not a mensch, it's an Aveda. No?
Is it a Doraita Rabbi? Or?
You know, in davening we say every day, La'elam yehe yadam yerei shemayim basei sirumeida la'emes. Yeah? So the Welt says, La'olam yehe yadam. First be a mensch. Then you could be Yerei Shemayim Baseset. Then you can fear God in hidden. You could be Moda Alamis. The first thing, Yehei Adam. Be a mensch. That's the first thing. Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. You have to be a mensch. And then you could... 1 second. Okay, back to the Gemara. So it says, Amar Abba Rabbi Chanam Rabbi Echim. This is the words of Rabbi Kiva. The Chachamim hold, Ein Kriyam HaKavis Bahim. So the Gemara asks now a very simple question. Who tells you it's Rabbi Akiva? Maybe it's Rabbi Shimon. Because Rabbi Shimon says the same thing like Rabbi Akiva, that the primary thing by Bikurim is putting it down, not reading the Psukim. And the Gemara says, Lemezu divrei Rabbi Shimon stimor. How do you know it goes according to Rabbi Akiva? Maybe it's like Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara answers, you're right. Hakamashmal, and he teaches us that Rabbi Akiva could Rabbi Shimon svirale. That Rabbi Akiva hold like Rabbi Shimon. Which means, even though really Rabbi Kiva was his teacher and Rabbi Shimon was the student, but the Gemara says Rabbi Kiva holds like Rabbi Shimon. Really, it's Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Kiva because Rabbi Kiva was the teacher of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It says, whenever it says Tam Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But Rabbi Kiva, we know, was the teacher of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was one of the five students left after the 24,000 students of Rabbi Kiva died. So the Gemara answers, Rabbi Shimon.
That incident.
When?
24,000 yeshiva bukhir.
In the Sfira Oimer. Sfira Sa'imer time.
Oh.
Okay, so the Gemara says, my Rabbi Shimon, what's the case of Rabbi Shimon? Now the next piece of Gemara is very simple. Is this going to, at the beginning, until you get into it, it's going to sound a little funny, but it's not. Just to preface it. We learned already many times, there's no such thing as extra things in Chumash. If the Torah uses something extra, and we don't need it, where the Torah puts it, put it somewhere else. That's a rule in the Torah. Why God does it, ask Him. But the bottom line is, a lot of times Hashem will put something, teach us a halacha, that the Torah really didn't even have to tell it to me, because I would know it without the Torah, from another din. Nevertheless, the Torah teaches it, tells it to us, to teach us something additional. Okay? Let's see the Gemara. There's a pasuk, I'm just going to read the pasuk before, because the Gemara doesn't quote the whole pasuk, the Gemara goes backwards in the pasuk. There's a pasuk that says as follows, you cannot eat in your gates, meaning, I'm just reading the pasuk, you're not allowed to eat outside of Yerushalayim. The Torah enumerates a lot of things that you're not allowed to eat outside Yerushalayim. What are they? Masa degon chesireishcha, the tithe of your grain. Equivalent ma'aser sheni, you have to eat in Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to eat becheres bekarcha, your firstborn animals. They have to be eaten in Yerushalayim, like we say every day in davening. V'chol nedarecha she'tider, any vowed offerings that you vow as a korban. V'nidveisecha, or your donative offerings, usrumas yodecha, and the truma of your hand. Now the Gemara says, truma over here is bikurim, not truma. Okay, because we know from a different pasuk that a kohen can eat truma wherever he wants. When the Torah says over here, you must eat truma in Yerushalayim, is not referring to truma, what we call truma, but it refers to the first fruits that you bring to the kohen. Okay? So now he quotes the pasuk and he says, Usrumas yadecha, it says in the Braisa, the words trumas yadecha, the truma of your hand, which is the last thing mentioned in the pasuk, what does it refer to? Bikurim. It refers to bikurim. That bikurim must be eaten in Yerushalayim. So Amar Rab Shimon says, Mabadza l'olam deinu. What is this pasuk teaching me? Meaning, Im la'eich l'chutz l'chaimo, if it teaches us that you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim, and if you do, you get whipped. Kal v'chaimer mi ma'iser hakal. I can learn it out from ma'iser, which is more lenient than becher. Meaning as follows. Very simple. If Meiser must be eaten in Yerushalayim, Bikurim, which is stricter, for sure must be eaten in Yerushalayim. It's a logic. It's called Kal V'chaymer. If the lesser thing has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, the stricter thing for sure must be eaten in Yerushalayim. Now, the Torah says, you have to eat Bikurim in Yerushalayim. So Reb Shimon says, why does I need the Pasuk to teach me that? I could learn it out without the Pasuk. Because if Maisir, which is lenient, easier than Bikurim. Why? Because Maisir, everybody eats. Bikurim, only a Kohen eats. Right? So if Maisir, which everybody can eat, you have to eat it in Yerushalayim, so Bikurim, which is stricter, for sure you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. So why does the Torah teach me Bikurim you have to eat in Yerushalayim? It's extra. Because I don't need it, I could learn it out. What is it teaching us? Well, because he says, my Maisir HaKal, Maisir, which is lenient, if you eat it outside of the gate, outside of Yerushalayim, like you get whipped, Bikurim like Kol Shekein. Bikurim, for sure you get whipped. So why does the Torah tell me don't eat Bikurim? So it can't mean just don't eat Bikurim outside of Yerushalayim, because that I know already. What is the Pasuk teaching me? Haleba HaKosav, what the Torah is coming to teach us, that La'ech LaBikurim, that if you eat Bikurim, actually, Kod Alem, before you read the Psukim of the Chumash, Shehu Laike, that you get whipped. Meaning, like we said before, simply the Pasuk is teaching me, don't eat Bikurim outside of Yerushalayim. So the Gemara asks, I know that without the Pasuk, because I could learn it from Maisir. If Maisir, which is easier, must be eaten in Yerushalayim, Bikurim, which is holier, for sure must be eaten in Yerushalayim. So what is the Torah telling me about Bikurim and Yerushalayim? The rule is, I don't need it for where the Torah says it, let's put it where I do need it. That if you eat Bikurim before you say the psukim of the Chumash, you're going to get whipped.
What are some examples of Bikurim, food?
First fruits, grapes, figs, dates, pomegranates, wheat and barley. An olive, yeah. The seven species that Eretz Yisrael is praised with.
Why is Bikurim more stricter than Maaser?
Because Bikurim can only be eaten by a Kohen. And Maaser everybody eats. Maaser Sheni. No, Maaser Sheni. Maaser you can eat anywhere else. Maaser Sheni. You sure? If they can eat Truma, we go to Maaser for sure.
So Rabbi.
One second. Do you understand? No. There's Maaser that you give to the Levi. That could be eaten everywhere. In addition to that, we learned last week, you give on the first year, the second year, the fourth year, and the fifth year. You give 10%. You take it to Yerushalayim and you eat it there.
What is that?
That's the third and sixth.
Maaser Sheni. So you have to eat that in Yerushalayim.
Correct. Now, anybody could eat it. Anybody can eat it.
Because anybody can eat it.
So it's not as strict as Bikurim, which only a Kohen can eat, right? Now, if Maaser must be eaten in Yerushalayim, Bikurim for sure must be eaten in Yerushalayim. Correct? So I don't need a Pasuk in Chumash to waste its ink to tell me you need to eat Bikurim in Yerushalayim. Because even if the Torah didn't say it, I would know it. Right? So what is the Torah teaching me about Bikurim? It's teaching...
It says
yeah, but over there, Truma must mean Bikurim. Truma is an uplifting. The Gemara discusses there are reasons why sometimes Truma is called Bikurim. I mean, why Bikurim is sometimes called Truma. But I don't want to get into that now because it's going to just mix up the situation. Trust the Gemara. Truma means Bikurim. Now, the Torah simply is telling me, you must eat Bikurim in Yerushalayim. So Reb Shimon says, I don't need a Pasuk for that. I can learn it out from Maaser. Right? So what is the Torah teaching me by Bikurim? The Torah is teaching me that if you eat it before you read the sentences of the Chumash, you're going to get whipped.
What are those sentences?
At the beginning of Kisave, you say, Arami Evidavi, that I, you know...
Another.
The Psukim, we say a little bit in the Haggadah. We say that the loving wanted to destroy us, and you have to be happy and with the coming to thank God for what he gave us.
Rabbi, what if the regular person is a Bikurim?
He's punished.
He's giving some to Kohen and some he wants to eat himself. Is it also prone to eat any Bikurim?
Only a Kohen could eat Bikurim.
I still don't understand how Rabbi Shimon comes to this conclusion that you must say this saying before you eat it. How does it get this?
Because take a Chumash. The Chumash says that's what you have to do. The Torah says the process. The Torah discusses at the beginning of Parshas Kisavei. The Torah discusses the process. You take the first fruits, you put them in a basket.
What page are you?
1068. You bring in the basket, and you should come, and you say, I declare to Hashem today that I have come to the land that Hashem swore to our forefathers. The Kohen shall take your basket from his hand and lay it before the altar. That's what we learned. One thing is you put it down. Then in Pasuk 5 it says, you should call out and say, an Aramean tried to destroy my forefathers, descended to Egypt, the Egyptian mistreated us, and the whole thing over there. Right? And then what do you do with it? Then you give it to the Kohen to eat. So there's a process that you have to do.
Right.
Now, what's that going to say? The Torah doesn't tell me anywhere clearly when Bikurim becomes edible. The Torah doesn't tell us anywhere clearly. Now you could eat the Bikurim. The Torah doesn't tell us that at all. We're trying to figure out when. Maybe I can eat it as soon as you bring it to the base of Migdash, the Kohen could eat it. Right? The Gemara says, the fact that the Torah says, don't eat Bikurim, simply it teaches us, don't eat it outside of Yerushalayim. I don't eat it because I can learn it out. So what is it teaching me? Don't eat Bikurim one. Don't eat Bikurim until the process is finished. That's what Rav Shimon is learning.
Aren't the examples you gave me of Bikurim eaten by Jews all over the world?
The first fruits are only eaten by the Kohanim. It's one of the gifts that you gave to the Kohanim. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, not today. Every time the Gemara learns out something from a pasuk, it doesn't mean that it wasn't given to Moshe at Sinai. But the Gemara is trying to figure out where do we see it in the Chumash. Sometimes the Gemara says we can't find it anywhere. You can't find it anywhere. So then it's halacha Moshe at Sinai. Right.
It's not like he came up with something.
But that's the way Torah works. The way Torah works is you derive it from sentences, you derive it from oral tradition. You know, every time the Gemara learns something from the oral tradition, the Gemara says, where do we find it? You know, where is it in the Chumash? Okay. Now the Gemara continues. This is a long braisa. It says in the Torah of Nidvisecha, the second to the last thing, your donation. What donation offerings are we talking about? Zutei de Ushlamim, it refers to the thanksgiving offering and a peace offering. What is a carbon teida? The carbon teida was brought for things that we bench gomel today. You know, if a person today travels overseas, you go through a desert, you're sick and you get healthy, or you were in prison and got out, so then you have to bench gomel. So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you actually brought a sacrifice called the Karban Teida that you brought.
When you say a desert, what does that mean? When you go to Vegas or Palm Springs, you have to go through a desert or Palm Springs?
Today, it's a valid question. Why don't you bench gomel when you fly from here to New York when you go over the desert?
No,
I'm answering you, man. Some Sfardim say every time you go on a plane, they bench Gemel. Yeah. No, I'm serious. Some people every time, no matter what. But there's a difference between flying overseas, where everybody benches Gomel, and some people, when they fly over a desert, like from here to New York, because it's so common, it's in the same country, and it's not... Years ago, when you traveled with a caravan or alone in the desert, it was mamish dangerous. There were beasts, there were robbers, there were, you know, it was a dangerous situation.
No, but also airplane is a danger when
driving a car is also a danger. The more car accidents than plane crashes.
When you, let's say you pass Mojave Desert, you don't say Gomel the whole
no.
thing? With a car, I'm talking about. You don't say it?
If you walk with a donkey, probably you would, yeah. or a camel. If you ride on a camel through the desert, you would.
What if you go to space? Same if you go to space.
Worry about it then. You know that when the first humans are going to land on Mars, you know who's going to meet them?
Yeah.
Chabad.
Chabad's already there, right?
Yeah. Okay, you're in bed 3 days. We're not doing all the Dimagay, but anyway, a carbon tater, by the way, the reason we say every day, except Shabbos and Yom Tov, Mizmor L'Seida, right after Baruch Shamar, is instead of the Thanksgiving carbon that they used to bring. The Mizmor L'Seida is the song for the tater, for the carbon tater. In fact, those people that say, Friday before Mincha, they say, Haydu and Pasach Aliyah, Sfadim say Pasach Aliyah. In the Hasidic world, they also say Haydu and Pasach Aliyah. Haydu is the 107th chapter of Tilim. Why? Because in the 107th chapter of Tilim Haydu, it mentions all the people that have to bench Gemel. Yerdei Yamba Anies, Yeshech Heshech Vitzamavis, and it says Yedu Lashem Chazdi 4 times. So the Baal Shem Tov said that the Kuv Zayin, to say Haydu before Friday night Mincha, Friday afternoon Mincha is from the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov said, you finished the week, you bench Gemel. You survived the week, you're going into the holiness of Shabbos, you bench Gomel.
What do we say that?
No, Petach Leo is different.
Rabbi, Shema Tov, ask you a question.
What? Are you a spokesman?
Did the rabbi give you an answer?
Sure.
Because he asked the question at the same time. I don't know.
I'm very talented. I answered 2 questions at the same time. Now, it says in the Pasuk, V'nidveisecha zuteide v'shlamim. Nidveisecha is the carbon teide and the carbon shlamim. And what is the teide telling me? That you need to eat it in Yerushalayim. And if you don't, you get whipped. The same thing like Bikurim. The Gemara is going to say the same thing. Amar Rav Shimon said, Ma'abo zelam deinu, what is this coming to teach us? Why? Because if the Torah wants to teach us that you have to eat it inside Yerushalayim and you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim, I don't need a pasuk. Why? The same thing again. I can learn it out from Meiser. Because if Meiser is easier, less holy than Karban Taida or the Karban Shlamim, yet you have to eat that in Yerushalayim. So the holier things, for sure, you have to eat in Yerushalayim. So why is the Torah coming? What is the Torah coming to teach us about the Torah and the Shlamim? It says, "Hanli ba akosiv." The Torah comes to teach me la'echo b'Torah v'Shlamim, that you eat the carbon Torah and the Shlamim. Lefnei zarika, before the blood was squirted onto the mizbeach, shehulaika, that you get malchus. Meaning, when is a carbon become permissible to eat? Now, there are certain karbanis nobody eats. They're called karban ola. Like the Torah says, ola means completely burnt. Nobody eats it. Not the kohen, not the guy that brings it. Only God eats it. I mean, the whole thing is burnt on the mizbeach. There are karban shlamim and toda that we're talking about now. The kohen ate. The person who brought it ate. And the Mizbeach, the altar, ate. In fact, one of the reasons why a carbon shlamim is called shlamim, from the word shalom, peace, Rashi explains, because everybody's happy. God is happy, he gets to eat. The Kohen's happy, he gets to eat. And the Jew that brought it is happy because he gets to eat. Because everybody partakes of the carbon shlamim. Now, when does a carbon shlamim become permissible to be eaten? Now, there are stages when you bring a carbon. When you bring a korban, first the kohen has to put his hands on it. Then you shecht it. Then you take the blood and you squirt it on the mizbeach. Now, technically, you shecht an animal, you could eat it. When is this korban allowed to be eaten? So the Torah doesn't say anywhere where, when. We don't know. So Rav Shimon says, this is what this pasuk is teaching me. The pasuk says you need to eat the shlamim inside Yerushalayim. So the Gemara asks, I don't need a pasuk to teach me that you can only eat it in Yerushalayim, because if Maaser must be eaten in Yerushalayim, shlamim for sure has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. So what is the Torah telling me an eating din of shlamim? That if you eat it before the blood is squirted on the mizbeach, you get malchus. What permits you to eat the korban? When is the process over? When you squirt, the kohen squirts the blood on the mizbeach. Just like bikurim could be eaten after you say the psukim, korban shlamim and korban taida could be eaten after you squirted the blood on the mizbeach. Before that, it's not allowed to be eaten. And if you eat it, you get whipped. What? Guy could bring a nedava. Could be a lot of reasons. Yeah, it could be. Now, then the Brisa continues another words in the pasuk. Again, the same concept. It says in the Torah, "Bekarcha v'tzeinacha." Your cattle and your sheep. Now what does that refer to? Zuchatas va'asham. That refers to a sin offering. And an asham is also a type of sin offering. It depends what sin you did. Sometimes you bring a chatas, sometimes you bring an asham. So Amar Rav Shimon, Rav Shimon again says, Ma bazal ramdeinu, what is this coming to teach us? Im leichel chutz l'chema, if it's coming to teach me that you have to eat it inside the walls of Yerushalayim, kal v'chema mi maisim. I can again learn it alpha meiser. So im lifnei zrika, if it teaches me that you're not allowed to eat it before you squirted the blood, so that I can learn from teid and shlamim. We just learned teid and shlamim, which is less strict than chatas and asham. Yet that also has to be eaten after the blood is squirted. So he says, im la'achar zrika, if you want to tell me, it has to be eaten after Zrika. How much more so from B'chor? So what it teaches us is that if you eat from the Chatas and Oshim, which are edible by the Kohen, even after you squirted the blood on the Mizbeach, but you ate it chutz l'kloyim, outside the walls of Yerushalayim, I'm sorry, outside the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, shulayka, that you get Malkus. The Gemara is saying, and this is, by the way, this is the Torah process. There's five things in the Psukim. And the Torah is telling us then, don't eat A, B, C, D, E, F. Don't eat 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You said 6.
6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. At least you're listening. Now.
Of course, I'm not a Pai Tzadik.
Now, if the Torah really doesn't have to tell me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Because 6 teaches me the din for all 5. Yet the Torah teaches us, don't eat 1, don't eat 2, don't eat 3, don't eat 4, don't eat 5. But if a 6 teaches me for all the other 5, why is the Torah teaching me 5 dinim? So obviously, the Torah is teaching us a new law that you can't learn out from anything else. And the stricter the object, the stricter the eating laws. For instance, Maaser Sheni can eat anywhere, as long as it's in Yerushalayim. So that teaches me everything must be in Yerushalayim. Then the Torah says, what was the next thing right afterwards? Then he said, Bikurim. What does Bikurim teaches me? That you can't eat it before you read it. Okay? Then the next one is Teid and Shlamim. You can't eat it before you squirt the blood. What does Chatas and Oshim teach me? That even after you squirted the blood, you can't eat it outside the Beis HaMikdash area. It has to be eaten inside the Beis HaMikdash. So each thing is teaching us another step in the laws of that particular sacrifice or din. The stricter the law, the easier part of it I can learn out from something less strict. So what do I learn out by each one? Each one has its own uniqueness that the other one doesn't have because it's stricter.
Rabbi, you keep mentioning Yerushalayim. Do you mean all of Israel or just the city of Jerusalem?
Just the old city of Yerushalayim. Not today's city.
Okay.
The old city of Yerushalayim. Today Yerushalayim is much bigger than the temples or the biblical Yerushalayim.
Right.
They enlarged the city.
Right.
So when the Torah speaks about what you're allowed to eat in Yerushalayim, we're talking about
The walled
city. Correct. The walled city was the biblical. You're right.
I davened by the wall. They didn't chase me away. I davened for Numit.
So, Rabbi Tamach Mashiach, the old city and the new city will not be part of Yerushalayim?
Gemara says that Yerushalayim is going to spread out over Eretz Yisrael. The whole Eretz Yisrael is going to become the Kedush of Yerushalayim. The Kedush of Eretz Yisrael is going to be spread in the Spashid B'chol HaRatzis. The Kedush of Eretz Yisrael, everything is going to be going up.
What did you say? Yerushalayim what?
The Gemara says in Kedushin that there's 10 levels of holiness. You know, in the world.
I got the first part.
And I'm just saying. So Yerushalayim is going to spread out throughout the entire Eretz Yisrael. We'll have the law of Yerushalayim. Eretz Yisrael will spread itself out around the world, meaning the whole world will have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael now.
Well, they built a temple. The temple will be built.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
you know where.
Right.
Yeah.
The Holy City, Crown Heights.
You can't stay here. To be a little angle. No, Mashiach comes in the Haftarah we read of Machar Chodesh, not Machar Chodesh. I'm sorry, of Shabbos Rish Chodesh. Says V'haya midei Chodesh bechotshei, u'midei Shabbos b'Shabbatay, yovei chobase l'shtachves l'fanei amar Hashem.
What does that mean?
Well, thank you. It says that when Mashiach V'haya will be midei Chodesh bechotshei every month. Umidei Shabbos b'Shabbatay, every Shabbos, Yovei Chol Basar, all flesh, meaning all people will come, Lishtachaveis Lefanai, to bow before me. That's the last pasuk of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. Yeah. It shall be that from new moon to new moon, and from Shabbos to Shabbos, all flesh shall come to prostrate themselves before me, said Hashem. So the Medrash learns out from this pasuk that Yovei is future tense. Now, the Beis HaMikdash used to go up 3 times a year. When Mashiach comes, we're going to go weekly to Yerushalayim.
But Shabbat's not going there.
Huh?
Shabbat's not going there.
What?
Going to Crown Heights.
Right.
Okay, so
everybody's going to come to Crown Heights.
So you have a place you've got to take Jews to put in the Crown Heights. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Chol Basar means even going.
Okay, well, let's worry about the Jews first. Okay, let's get back to the Gemara. Fly on eagle's wings. Yep. Okay. Then it says, again, he's going up in the pasuk backwards because everything going upwards is holier than the later things. And then it says in the pasuk, Nidarecha, the carbon Nidarim, Zu'ela is a burnt offering, which is the holiest type of a carbon that nothing gets eaten but the Mizbeach. Amr Rav Shimon says, Maz Bala Zela Lamdeinu, what does this pasuk come to teach us? If it comes to tell me outside of the wall, that I learn out from Maisa. Maisa has to be in Yerushalayim, Eila for sure. Im Lefnei Zerika, if you want to teach me that the pasuk says you're not allowed to eat it before squirting the blood, that I can learn out from Kavachamim Mitaydu Shlamim, that I can learn out from the Shkarbim Shlamim. If you want to tell me that after Zerika you could only eat it in Yerushalayim, in the Beis HaMikdash, that I know from Bchar. I'm sorry, that you can eat it after the squirting of the blood, that I learned out from Bchar. If you want to tell me you're not allowed to eat it outside of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, I learned it out from Chatzos and Ashim. So what is the Torah telling me about Oila? It says, Aleba, because the Torah is only coming to teach us, La'echla min ha'Oila, that if you eat the carbon Oila, La'achazrik, after the squirting, Afilu b'fnim, even inside the Beis HaMikdash, Shehu laika, that you get whipped. Why? Because Oila, nobody's allowed to eat. So Rav Shimon took this pasuk and took it completely out of the simple context of the pasuk, and he said the Torah is teaching us the laws of eating karbanis, each carbon at its own level. That Oila, the Torah is teaching me basically, you're never allowed to eat it. Teidon shlamim amichatas and asham, you can only eat it inside the Beis HaMikdash. B'chor and teida, you can only eat it after the zrika. This you can only eat in Yerushalayim. So the Torah is teaching us all the laws of eating of Kabanis, which is completely different than the simple meaning of the Pasuk, which the simple meaning of the Pasuk is, don't eat all these 5-6 things outside Yerushalayim. So the Shimon comes along and says, I don't need a Pasuk for 5 out of the 6 things. So each thing of the Pasuk he takes to learn something deeper in the laws of eating. So Rava says a very nice saying now. Amar Rava said, "The Yalda Eima Kerab Shimon Teilit." If a mother is about to give birth, he should daven that his kid should be like Rab Shimon. You know, he wants to say that this Rab Shimon over here is unbelievably brilliant, and therefore somebody should daven if his mother is about to give birth that it should be like Rab Shimon. V'ilay, and if not, lay tailit, she shouldn't give birth. In other words, Rav is saying, this is an expression, but it's an expression of praising Rav Shimon of his brilliance. But Rav continues, not done. He says, Alpha gav de islu pircha, even though I can refute everything he says.
Who's son is Shimon?
Rav Shimon. The famous Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai.
So he's not related to our founding fathers and Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe.
He's related, yeah.
He is?
Yeah. Related.
He was a Chabadnik that hid in the cave for a while. By the way, just to discuss Rabbi Shimon for a second, this is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. The Gemara says that Rabbi Kiva, was praising, Rabbi Kiva was left with 5 students. And each one of the students, Rabbi Kiva was praising. So, and Rabbi Shimon, he didn't praise. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon became upset. Like, all the other 4 are getting praises, and I'm not. So Rabbi Kiva noticed it, and he said to Rabbi Shimon, Dayach, it's enough for you. Shani uberacha makirim gedulosach, that only me and God can understand your greatness. And as he said to Rav Shimon, I can't even compliment you because you're on a different caliber completely. Only me and God understand your greatness. So Rav Shimon was Rav Shimon ben Yochai, you know what I mean? He wasn't. I'm sure he learned it from Rabbi Kiva.
So he was the same level.
Every person had their uniqueness.
So
the whole Torah that we have today of oral tradition is all based on Rabbi Kiva's teachings. The Gemara says because from the 5 students of Rabbi Kiva, he rebuilt the entire oral Torah. So therefore, Moshe Woods says, a nameless Mishnah, it's Rabbi Meir. A nameless this, it's Rabbi Yehuda. A nameless this, it's Rabbi Yasi. You know what I mean? And the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Vakula, and all of the oral Torah is Alibud Rabbi Kiva, is Rabbi Kiva's teachings, because he was the one that rebuilt Torah after the 24,000 students died, and there was no teaching, there's no Torah left, basically. He rebuilt it. So Rabbi Shimon was a student of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Nassim. Okay, so now he says, now, Rav Shimon made very, very much sense. But now Rav is going to show each one he could refute. And the Gemara is going to say, the Gemara is going to ask, if you're refuting him, so why is he so smart? You just got through praising him that he's brilliant, and then you say, but we're going to refute him. So he says, because Rav Shimon learned it in such a way that he undid all my refuting. He undid all my refutings. He says, this is not hard Gemara. He says, Machum de Bikurmi Maiser. We said before, and I mentioned this before, the Gemara said, if Maiser, which is lenient, has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, Bikurim for sure. Right? Now, somebody asked, why is Bikurim stricter than Maiser? So he said, because Maiser everybody could eat, and Bikurim only a Kohen could eat, which makes Bikurim stricter than Maiser. So he says, Adrab, Maiser Chomer. I'll show you where Maiser is stricter than Bikurim. Why? Shekein Osir Le'enin, an Einin is not allowed to eat Maiser, but he's allowed to eat Bikurim. What's an Einin? An Einin, God forbid, if a relative dies before the funeral. From the time of death until the person is buried, you're called Onein, and you're freed from all mitzvahs. Now, by Maiser, the Torah says, V'samachta. You have to be happy. An Einin is not happy. So we learn that an Onein is not allowed to eat Maiser. But an Onein could eat Bikurim. So what's stricter? Who said, you tell me Bikurim is stricter because only a Kohen could eat it. And I'll show you that Maiser is stricter because an Onein cannot eat it and Bikurim an Onein could eat. So Maiser is stricter. And then he goes to the next thing. You're telling me Toed and Shlomim are stricter than Maiser. He says, why? Shekein Tu'umim Matan Domim Ve'imurim L'gabi HaMizbeach. Because by sacrifices, the Shlomim, you need to bring the organ, the limbs on the Mizbeach. He says, Adarab Maiser Chomer. I'll show you a case that Maiser is stricter. Where do we see Maiser is stricter? Shekein Tu'umim Kesef Tzura. It needs coined silver. Remember we said if you want to redeem it, you need to bring coined silver to redeem it. Right? That Tod and Shlomim don't have. If you want to redeem it, you can redeem it with anything. Right? So again, what's stricter? It's not necessarily what you're saying, they're stricter. Then he says, Umay Chomer Abchor from Tod and Shlomim. Why is B'chor stricter than Teidin Shlomim that you said before, Shekinein Kedusha Mirachem, because it's sanctified from the womb. As soon as it's born, the firstborn animal is holy. Adarab, Teidin V'Shlomim Chamurim. I'll show you that a Shlomim is stricter than B'chor. Why? Shekin Tu'unin Smicha Nisachim Tanufa Chazi V'Sheik. When you bring a carbon Teidah, you need to have leaning on it, pouring, waving, and the thighs go to the Kohen, which don't apply by a B'chor. In other words, the whole Gemara of Shim was saying why A is stronger than B. A is stricter than B. So Rav is saying, and I'll show you, B is stricter than A. In each case, he's showing him, every time you said A is stricter than B, I'm showing you a case that B is stricter than A. So then your whole logic doesn't make sense. You're telling me you could learn out B from A. Because if A is lenient, and you have to eat it in Yerushalayim, B, which is stricter, for sure you have to eat in Yerushalayim, and I'll show you that B is stricter than A. And maybe that's why you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. What? Yeah, but if you redeem, you're right. But if they developed a mum, a blemish, then you could redeem them. When the Gemara says you can't, what the Torah says, you can't redeem a carbon for a carbon, and if you do, they both become holy, right? That's only if it's a unblemished, pure animal. But if you have a blemished animal, I'll give you an example. What do you do when a bechor? You know, by the way, today, in Eretz Yisrael, what do you do with firstborn animals? There's still a kedusha, a sanctity, from, like the Gemara says here, from the womb. A firstborn animal is holy from birth, and therefore you have to give it to a kohen, which in turn brought it as a carbon, which in turn ate part of it. Right?
Is it only donkey or any animal?
No, a donkey you have to redeem for a sheep. But a kosher animal. So what do you do today in Israel when they give birth to, when the people own farms and they have, they give birth to animals? What do you do? So a lot of people, it's like the selling chametz bit, when they have an animal that's about to give birth to a firstborn calf, they sell the animal to a guy, and then is born by the guy. So it doesn't have the sanctity of a firstborn animal because it's a guy's animal. There's no pchor by a guy. And then they buy it back. It's like the chametz spitzel. In other places, what they do is they put the animal in a fenced, narrow pen with barbed wire. And basically, the animal ends up blemishing itself. And once it blemishes itself, it loses the status of a bechor. And then that's it. It's not a bechor anymore. No, the bechor you have to bring it to the base of Mikdash. Firstborn people you redeem from the kohen. You can't redeem a firstborn animal from a kohen. You have to bring it as a carbon.
So what's the remedy? Somebody didn't do it. You have to kill it?
No, it says you let it graze until it develops a blemish, and then you can redeem it.
Okay.